Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this edition of The Photo Show. As you can see, we have a full house tonight, not only our three regular experts, but we brought along Craig Jobbins to talk about portrait photography and all the ins and outs of that. So let's say hello to Ian. Good evening.
Evening. You all right?
Yep. Lovely poppy field behind.
Yeah, it don't look like that today. We've had non-stop rain all day. It's been atrocious. That was a couple of weeks ago, that one.
Yep, they look pretty good. Good evening, Damien. That's a pretty dramatic sky behind you.
Yes, I decided I needed to see the sea. I hadn't seen the sea for a year, so I went down to Weston. The sea looked good, but Weston looked a bit tired.
Well, you would have thought it'd be fresh and modern with nothing going on for the last year, so, you know. And welcome back from holidays, Neil. I believe you've been away.
I had a week off, yeah. Yeah, it was quite nice. I was meant to be going to a music festival, but COVID struck, of course. So. Bit of golf and a bit of photography.
Oh, yeah. I went out and played my annual round of golf last week. And Aylesbury Golf Course is now looking for gold in some of the holes and divots I left. So, yeah, that was a pretty impressive, or non, as the case may be. And let's also introduce our guest tonight, our guest presenter, who's Craig. Good evening, Craig. Welcome to the show.
Brilliant. It's nice to be with you all tonight.
Good, good. Craig, your other role is chairman of LMUG, which must be almost a full-time role these days.
Sometimes it does feel like it, for sure. Right. Today was all about dodging the rain. As you could probably see, I've got rather wet hair at the moment because I've literally just come in from working on a shoot this afternoon.
Right. And you're also in your spare time, you're a podcaster. You do the Brew and Bright show for LMUG as well.
I do. I'm the one that puts together all the blooper reels, as I'm sure some of us know. It takes up quite a lot of my time.
So that's something for people to listen out for as well. Okay, so let's move into our section about the news that we've seen over the last few weeks. So there's been some interesting developments over the last few weeks. One or two of the items have caught our attention. Also, we said in the last couple of shows about the new BBC Photograph Challenge of the Year. We said we're trying to have a good look at it. I only saw one episode, but I think Ian and Neil and Damien have had a chance to view it. And of course, this week, the winners were announced. They've been have been announced or being announced?
Have been announced, yeah.
So overall, what was the show format? How did you think it worked, Neil?
It was pretty good. I got to see, I think, about three of the episodes in the end I've seen. Like the idea that they were given a mystery challenge, to go out and capture something just using a phone. That was pretty interesting, although some of the images that came back were a bit dubious, I thought. Yeah, interesting as well, the two guys that won it, because it's a joint, they're a joint winners, but their photography are completely different, really different styles. One quite abstract, the other one more traditional sort of landscape. But yeah, it's the display of photos at the end was very good, I thought.
Did you agree with the judging, Ian? Was it, we've discussed this in the past about photographic competitions being really in the lap of the gods. Do you connect?
Yeah, I mean,
what did you think?
I mean, it's difficult. I mean, the younger chap, that was a bit of a surprise to me, actually, because he did produce some good stuff, but throughout the sort of episodes, he really struggled and he got criticized quite a bit for some of the stuff that he produced. But and then he won it. I was like, okay, that's a bit of a surprise. I thought the older chap did very well because he came in from sort of like a wildlife background, and he put his hand to, he got stuck into everything and produced some really great shots. So it's photography, isn't it? It's all, you know, objective. Yeah. Any one of them could have done well. But what a few things that I really liked about what Neil already mentioned was the mobile phone bit. I think that was really key. I mean, you know, Rankin said it, you know, anyone can take a picture of a phone, but it's not just about taking a picture. I want you to go out and take something that's more than just a photo snapped on a mobile phone. And the other thing that I liked about it throughout the whole series was there was none of this, oh, you know, what are you shooting with? What camera, what lens? There was none of that at all. There was none of the technical side of it. It was all about the images, which I think was really important. It wasn't, you know, oh, well, he's got a better camera than me, so he's going to get better pictures. It was not focused on that at all, which I thought was really good, because they just focused on the images. And some of the images that rank in light, and I've got a friend that keeps telling me this, is because I get too technical, you know, is it straight? Is it in focus? You know, is it the exposure correct? Yeah, Rankin said it's about the overall image. And there was a couple there that I thought, technically they're not great, but yeah, they were really good images. You know, there might have been some minor things with them, but overall they were really strong images. And that's what Rankin tended to focus on. Didn't look into, they did mention, you know, composition and exposure and stuff, but it was more about the overall image and did it just work regardless of whether there was, you know, something slightly out of focus or so. Yeah, it was interesting.
For me, the winner was Rankin. I thought Rankin came over really well. Some critics said he was too nice. Good television is where you'd be a bit nasty to people, and they thought that the Chelsea breaking down was really good television. Well, yeah, well, that's not for me. I thought Rankin came over well, and his production team behind him. I mean, I think some of the photographers they brought on, I mean, Chris, what's his name? The wildlife photographer didn't come across well on television. Peckham, no, he didn't come across well. I thought Rankin came over well, and he had a desire to help people, which is really nice. He was wanting to help them through, and he was encouraging to all of them. And I like that. But then some critics felt that was too nice of a television. I don't know.
Mm. The only other thing I felt with it, and did you see it at all, Craig?
I did. I've seen two or three episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, just to the portrait side of it, the only thing that I got not frustrated about was, but just, you know, if you try to do portrait stuff, one of the skills is, you know, is the lighting of it, etc. And these guys, literally, they just had to hold the camera and snap. Like, everything was literally, well, it appeared like everything was pretty much done for them. You know, lighting, it was tethered shooting. It was, they literally, if they couldn't get a good shot, you like, well, everything was set up for them. You know, they got a model, makeup, you know, outfits, everything that they should have got a good shot, I think, because everything was done for them. That would be the only criticism I'd have.
I still enjoyed it. It was really good television, and I got wrapped up in it. It was nice, and it you didn't feel overawed by it. You felt, yeah, these were guys like ourselves. You could relate to them, and I'd like to see more of it. I personally enjoyed it.
Unfortunately, we were not able to show up the images that were taken. There's a BBC moratorium on any copyright. I can only show the link to the website here if you go to iPlayer. Obviously, if you follow up there, you will be able to see some of the images shown there. But yeah, unfortunately, I can't show you anything here on the show from that show. So go and have a look in iPlayer. I think all the episodes are there. You can catch up if you haven't had a chance to see it. Craig, what was your overall view of the show?
I liked it. I liked the fact that the contestants didn't necessarily all have some form of experience. I don't know, with some of these other types of programs, like a musical challenge or something, they come from that industry in the beginning. It was nice to have a fresh start. I do agree with you on what you said about the portrait stuff. It was kind of like they'd walked into a kit setup. There was none of the lighting settings or the typical struggles that you'd come across in trying to do one of those shoots. It didn't really give a clear impression of what that's really like. I'd like to see them try and do it on their own again.
I think pretty successful first hit for the show. I'm sure it'll be back. So maybe they'll bring in, what's the guy off of Strictly Come, Craig Revel Horwood type thing, who's really going to lay into the poor photographers while Ian does his uncle arm on the shoulder job. But yeah, altogether, I found it an interesting concept. Whether or not any of us will get on it is another issue entirely. So we'll watch out for that. The other piece of news I wanted to bring up, and I saw this, it came out today. It can do with Western Digital and their My Life range of hard drives. apparently it's either a hack or a problem in that the hard drive is receiving a signal to revert back to factory settings, and it promptly wipes the drive of everything that's on it and all the links to it. And apparently, I've read from one or two, it's almost unrecoverable. So they're suggesting if you have one of these devices, a MyLife, unplug it straight away and contact them about how they're going to overcome the problem. And certainly if it's your only form of backup, which some people have been complaining about, then that's another issue. I'm sure all the guys here will agree that you need to have multiple forms of backup. It's no good just having one big drive, or even thinking you have two mirrored drives in a unit, or even two mirrored external drives. If you haven't got something off-site and you haven't something on the cloud, then you are vulnerable to either, you know, a complete wipeout. If your property catches fire or you're burgled or something like that, everything to go. So always been my advice to make sure you've got something like an iCloud or a Dropbox or anything like that, where you've got it stored on a cloud measure, as well as different formats of hard drives. And I suppose these days, discs, and we've all had them. What do we have? Mini discs, CD-ROMs, DVD drives, you name it. I think I've been through it. But you need to have multiple formats. And if you do have, one last bit of advice, make sure you have something you're able to read them on. If you're a jazz drive fanatic and you've got hundreds of jazz dive discs and you haven't got a jazz drive driver, you're stuck. So so just think long and hard about your backup process.
It's interesting. I don't know how they're going to fix it. Oh, can you do a firmware upgrade on a hard drive? I mean, now that
you can, but
plug it back into the internet.
Yeah, if you've got to disconnect it from the internet, I guess you have to download it from a site somewhere.
What a headache for Western Digital, though. Christ.
Yeah, they must have run it. So they're not, this is one show at the moment, they're not entirely sure whether it's a hack or someone has made an internal blunder and switched on this. By the way, if you're not doing anything tonight, wipe the drive. You know, set yourself back to factory settings. It'll be all right in the morning. And then you come in and find I think the first guy who reported said that he was worried that he only had several hundred gigabytes left on the drive, and fired it up the following morning, and lo and behold, he had 4 terabytes available. So, bit of a shock. So so watch out for that bug if you are a Western Digital user. Okay, that was our news at the moment. So in tonight's episode, for gear and kit that we've seen and we've been interested in, the first thing that came to light was these new cards, these new SD cards by, Lexar, is that the pronunciation? You know how I murder the English language. I think, Craig, you had an interesting take on this, about these new cards. These are meant to be much faster than the cards we used to use in for photography.
They are. So they're kind of in the CFast or CFast Express kind of series in terms of their speed that they record at. I think they're trying to target the 4 and 8K market more than they are anything else. I don't know. I have opinions of Lexar. This is obviously personal, but I've had big issues with these in the past. They kind of do their own thing in terms of reformatting regularly. As a company, I don't know how much support you get from them. I know that the company itself has been sold once or twice. They pulled out of the hard drive market and the memory card market for a while, and then kind of got rebought and reemerged. Some people swear by them, but personal opinion of that is they kind of like to advertise the fact that they make really big memory cards. So I wonder if this is just another marketing ploy. But I don't know what others' experiences of them are.
Well, I can only comment. I've got one that I use for my camera, which I bought. It was on a special offer, so it seems to be. I think it's a 128 card, and it's fairly quick. But the point being, as you raised, that the newer cameras that are coming out, the new Canons, the Nikons, the Sonys, are all having extremely high transfer rates. So will these cards fit into that system, or are they going to be very backward compatible? Yeah, Damien, you were the user, weren't you? You've used
them. I use Lexa. I've never had any problems with it, but they just, I've just stuck with them. And I don't know what the life of a memory card is, but I mean, I don't go to too large because I just tend to store locally after a while. So I've not really had any problems with them.
And what's the process, guys? Do you clear the cards down after each shoot, or do you wait until they're full, or how do you work that? Or do you use a card for one shoot and then put it away and use another card? Ian?
I'll download them, and I will not format. I will always format the card in the camera, but I won't do that until I've done my, until I basically got about two backups, a backup on my sort of my time machine, and a cloud backup. Until I've done that step, I don't format the card. So I've always got, well, three or four copies at one stage before I even format it. But that sometimes that'll be, I do one shoot, I've done the backup, I'll format it. Sometimes I've done two or three shoots before I've got round to backing up, and then I'll format the card. But I always do my formatting in the camera.
All right, that's interesting. Not on a card reader or on a computer.
So I follow pretty much the same as Ian. I did once format the card in the camera a bit too soon before I transferred things, and never again.
So, yeah.
I have a set of cards that I'll take those out, and I'll take the card in the camera out after I've transferred it. And then I'll format it next time it goes back in when it swaps back in.
My biggest problem was forgetting to put them back in and then walking out of the house and 10 minutes later taking the camera out and then, oh, what is that?
Yeah,
in fact, on my Nikon now with the QXD cards, I don't take them out of the camera at all. They live in there because I just plug a USB-C cable into the camera and transfer it directly from the camera. It's really fast.
Does that charge as well on the Nikon,
does it? It does on some of the cameras, yeah.
I actually use the XQD cards for something else. So I don't actually use them in any of my camera bodies, but they're used as mobile backups to an external device while I'm out on a shoot if I swap cards. So once the second card's gone in, it's actually cloning the SD card onto that. So I've always got a live backup, just in case.
That's fine when you've got two card slots. Some of us haven't got that far yet, Craig. We're still at the lowly level of having just a single card. Does that also explain? I remember we were joking and laughing about the problems Canon had with their overheating. And apparently, from the bits I read about that, it was down to the fact that there was two cards in the camera, and trying to write to both cards at the same time was causing the overheating problems. And apparently the simple solution was to remove one of the cards. And
it makes sense, doesn't it?
This allowed it to... it could have been that maybe they were just in too close a proximity and the cards were maybe at the limit of their read and write ability. So that's why they were so generating so much heat as they were being fed all this. It was to do with the 8K video, wasn't it? That was what was really blowing the series. But apparently the simple solution was to just remove one of the cards. So I suppose these newer cards, which have got higher transfer rates, will obviously alleviate some of that problem with transfer speeds and transfer rates and the heat that's generated. But that's interesting. So we'll have a look at that. There's no prices on these, but I don't suppose they'll be cheap.
No.
Imagine in terms of buying lots of memory cards, they're in the realms of the Sony Tough cards, which come at a slight premium as well, if you've ever used those. They're about £30 more just for the fact that you can supposedly drive over it and it doesn't break.
All right. Okay. So we'll keep an eye on that on other cars. I suppose, because once this one has been released, all the other manufacturers will be jumping on the bandwagon with their latest ones. Right. Okay. The other one that I saw, I think you had managed to have a quick look at this, Ian, was this app. It's called Satellite 3D. And what it's meant to do, it's meant to help you learning lighting setups and how light works. Obviously very important, certainly in the portrait, if you're doing studio works. And what this app does is it basically pretends to be a lighting studio. So you can set up the studio, you can paint what color the walls are, and then it gives you a whole series of options about your model. So you can design the model however you want, male, female, black, white, green, whatever you want, big hair, low hair, or a whole range. So you set up your model, and then it gives you lighting solutions using different types of light sources. Ian, you had a chance to have a quick look at it?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, I'd be interested to hear what Craig thinks. I mean, if you're a working sort of professional portrait photographer, I'd imagine you know your lighting and this wouldn't be that useful to you. But I don't know. I mean, in terms of pre-visualization, it could be a useful tool. You know, if you haven't got a lot of time with a model, then you might want to sort of beforehand sort of pre-visualize some ideas. And you might want to go through those with the model rather than getting onto set or wherever you're going to do the model shoot and then faffing around with lighting and it not quite working. This could give you a starting point, but it comes at a cost of $183, I think it was. So it's not cheap, but yeah, it's interesting.
I presume you can find a lot of this out on the web as well. It's because it is an art, isn't it, to light portraits.
Without a doubt.
The ones that they look
at. Yeah. I've watched hours of sort of YouTube videos and think, oh yeah, that looks easy enough. And then you do it and you think, oh, it's not, why the shadow's not quite falling right. And yeah, it is a skill.
Because without a doubt. You watch these people, sometimes you see these shows demonstrating it and you've got the lovely model on the beach and you think, oh, that's a nice photograph. And then it pans back and you've got six different people holding up different color backlights and shields and lighting. And there's, you know, you think, well, hang on, it obviously doesn't look like that in the picture. So sometimes that can be a bit of a blow to someone like myself who doesn't know this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think the key.
Would you say that it teach you about lighting, Ian?
Sorry?
Would it teach you about lighting, do you think, this app?
I don't know. I think sometimes you can learn a lot just by doing it, can't you? Sometimes that's... The only problem with sometimes doing it is sometimes I think you can hit a hurdle and you don't know how to overcome it sometimes. If you had limited
time in a location and you could model that location, then maybe something like this would be very valuable. If you can somehow map it and create the studio that you're in, then yeah, I could see it could be useful because you haven't got time to play about with stuff. But probably if you're an experienced person, you would kind of know what you want, what your style is and where to position your lights accordingly. And tweak something very quickly.
I don't think the app is actually set for that market, is it? As you say, you would know most of this offhand.
It looks like an interesting learning tool, but maybe not for that price.
No, I was going to say, yeah, it's maybe higher than it needs to be. Damien, have you've done studio portrait work at all, or?
No, I'd like to do it. I played around with it, but I suppose this app looks like a computer game to me. I mean, you just play around with it and whatever. And the case of learning on the job is what would be good. I mean, most of my training came up as with dentistry, doing macro photography and that type of thing. So lighting was always a ring flash and how you set it up from that point of view. So moving on to portrait stuff, I mean, the single light I understand, and then when you get into the two lights and the three lights, it gets a bit complicated. So I go back to the one light because I understand that, and a bit of reflecting, I can understand that bit. But then moving it on further, I suppose I just looked at it now. I mean, it looks interesting, but I'm not sure I'd pay the money for it. No,
I guess the other thing though is, a lot of this stuff is not cheap stuff. You know, when you get into big soft boxes and beauty dishes and stuff like that, you might. If you wanted to add a certain softbox or a beauty dish to your equipment or whatever, you might want to try it on here first and see what the effect is. And
there does seem to be quite an extensive range of light sources in
there's loads in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I could see them when you buy it, saying to you, if you want this extra softbox or whatever, it's an add-on for an extra, $10, you get this set of lights. In-app
purchase, is it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's crying out for it, Oh, we've got a new range of models out that you can put in there. Here you go. It's this or this new accessories you can put on them.
I'm waiting to hear what Craig says so that I can, learn a few tips and see what I have to buy the software. We've got Craig on, you see. So.
He doesn't need it.
just before we get to Craig, I have to say that your lighting rig up set up tonight, Damien, is pretty smart with that single strobe light down low below you. You're looking good. Your lighting is well.
It's a rotor light as well. So.
Oh, no.
Is that one of the freebies they sent you?
I've locked it off now.
while Damien tries to get his light back, Craig, have you had a chance to look at this software? What do you think?
His lights have gone out officially.
Yeah, they were ages ago, mate, ages.
I like the idea of this piece of software, but I don't see the practicality in it. I don't think I would use it on a daily basis. As you said, I think as a learning tool is quite a good idea because there are so many different types of light fitting or adapters and mounts. It may be useful in that sense for someone that's not going to go out and spend hundreds, even thousands of pounds on lighting rigs. I see this in a slightly different way. So I come from an architectural background and using 3D rendering software. This seems kind of a gimmick. It looks very much in a way that you would render or light a building in a 3D computer program rather than a real world scenario. The one thing that did make me chuckle is what it says about that it has presets in terms of skin tones and eye colors and nationalities. I'd like to see how that really works. That is something that you could only really learn on the job, to be perfectly honest. It's interesting that they've have they gone and mentioned the manufacturers of some of the lights in this?
No, I mean, looking at you look at light shaping, it's just very, reflector, beauty dish white, octoform. No, there's no sort of like a pro photo or anything like that, or Godox or nothing like that. They're just, strip light 40 by 180 centimeters is sort of bog standard, but maybe there's an opportunity there.
True. What worries me is that someone's going to design this whole lovely lighting rig and then go out and buy a Amazon equivalent of all this equipment. And it's a completely different setup to if you were using Profoto or something along those lines, even Rotolite.
The last piece of gear we're going to mention, and we've been mentioning this nearly every show for the last half dozen shows, is the fabled Canon R3. We've talked about it in general terms, in rough terms, in loose terms, but apparently no more. On Tuesday, apparently the Canon is going to be announced officially. There's still a number of rumours of how it's going to be and what it's going to be. But hopefully we'll have a better review of this on the next show. We can actually show you what it's like and tell you a little bit about it. So apparently
there was one quite close to me recently.
Yep.
One of these. Yeah. It was on there was a picture of it on Carpis Bay Beach. I don't know if anyone see that?
No. Didn't they give one to Gordon Lang to have a play with? Or I know
Gordon Lang. Is he a press photographer or something?
No, a well-known YouTuber. And he actually, no, I say better than YouTuber. He has written two popular books that I'm aware of that are all about editing photos in camera rather than using external software. They are really highly rated. He is actually a nice guy. I've met him numerous times. But he seems to get access to lots of things to play with.
Yeah, no, I think someone had access to it for the G7. That was down the road from here at Carbis Bay, and there was a picture of the R3 on Canon's Instagram or something, touting it, sat on the sand at Carbis Bay down the road. I don't think I'd want it after it's had all that sand in it, though.
Oh, you'd say yes. If you were offered, you'd say yes.
Yeah. I'm going to ask the sand question in terms of what, in terms of the nitty gritty, what do we think of the specs?
I'm really confused by it all because to me, it, on paper, it looks better than the 1DS Mark IV or wherever we are now.
Yeah.
But there's still rumouring that there could be a, you know, down the line, there could be an R1. I don't see where it all fits in because, I mean, the R3 on paper looks incredible. How can anything, you know, an R1 be, well, I mean, if the R3 is going to be priced at, say, $6,000, you know, where does an R1 come into the equation? So I'm really confused. And the R3 looks like a 1D in terms of shape and size. It's really confusing in terms of the roadmap, if you like, but it does look, it looks impressive.
I assume they're going to be very light. They're going to be very light cameras as well. Weight will be, there won't be that weighty, will they?
The R3 is going to be. Well, I don't know. It's built like the 1D, isn't it? And it takes the same battery as the 1D, so it's a chunky bit of kit. It's
Funny
you should say that, Ian. I've just seen on the Canon rumors site, like they normally do, the spec for the R1. Apparently, they're expecting an 85 megabyte global shutter, a 15 EV dynamic range, a 5-axis image stabilization of up to 9 stops, a 9.5 super speed electronic viewfinder, and a price of about $8,500. So better start saving or stop buying all those books, Damien, and save up for your R1. So yeah, so we'll have fun with the R1 rumors over the next few months. But
and you've got to make sure you've got a second body as well.
Yeah, as of Tuesday, we'll know better about the R3. Okay, what about, have you got any ideas on lighting, Craig? Is there any lighting kits or lighting bits that you've seen that you'd recommend?
Oh, so I like aperture video lights a lot and use them for stills photography more than anything. They do not flicker in video as well. In terms of frame rate, that's really good. I've actually got one here. Let me see if I can screw it. It goes for a demonstration. Wonderful things.
Oh no, there's a company called Aperture, isn't there?
Yes.
And they make them.
And they are completely color spectrum controlled. You can use your iPhone or Mac or PC to control firstly the strength of the light, the color. It makes such a difference. It makes portrait photography much, much easier to control in different environments, a lot quicker.
Right. As I've often said, any of you out there listening to the show or watching the show, hear rumours or see kit that you'd like us to have a look at or review, please send us an email, tell us what you think, and we'll have a quick look if we can and pass judgment wherever it's possible. And of course, as we say every time, if any of the manufacturers out there would like to send us some kit to test, we're more than happy to do that for them and we won't charge them a penny. So tonight, we've done in the past, we've got a special guest. We've brought him along to chat about his work. He's a freelance photographer, as well as many of the other things we discussed. But we also want to talk about portraits. It's not a particular bag of most of the guys here. I think we all have different styles. But Craig, you've been taking portraits for some time now.
I have indeed. Well, I started obviously, like most, being an architecture student and being very interested in photography. And that kind of took over rather than becoming an architect in that sense. In terms of taking portrait photography, I've probably been doing that for 6 years. In the last 2 years, minus the pandemic, has been my full-time role in taking lots of portrait style photography.
I mean, is this on commission basis from clients as well as what work you're doing yourself?
It is. So I have a mixture of things. So I have a few projects running at the same time that are quite different, more like storytelling projects, which I'm happy to go into more detail on. But there are lots of commission type works or different types of projects in terms of product photography, sometimes to do with portraits, especially jewelry design or fashion.
So we've got a few of your images that we're going to show up and have a chat and a talk. Guys, have you got any opening questions for Craig while I get these photographs set up?
I'd love to know, how do you deal with people that are wearing glasses and the reflections off of the lenses?
Oh, that's actually a really good question. Sometimes there are some quite clever tricks in terms of taking pictures with glasses. One is using vintage lenses. So something that you'll come to find in some of the pictures we'll see here, they're actually not taken with current lineup lenses that you can just buy off the shelf. So some of them are early 1930s, some of them are 1940s lenses. And in terms of the glasses question, a lot of that is actually to do with what coating is on the lens. So you can actually have a play with the reflection of the lens. Some of it comes down to editing, obviously, but it is kind of a game of chance with some things as well, especially if you're trying to like hide myself from being in the portrait as well, if it's a full facial picture. But that is always a good challenge.
But I was always taught the trick just to do that, just to give it a little bit of an angle to the glass, and that just does a quick way of doing it.
I also was told one of the tricks was to actually have just the frames with no lenses in them, so that the person's wearing the frame.
Set of Harry Hill glasses, Martin.
You don't actually see the reflection.
Okay. It was one of these things that I took a photo a couple of months back now, and the guy was wearing glasses, and I said to him, do you normally wear them for work? He just wanted a picture for a profile for work. And he went, so we need to have them on. He went, yeah, really? It's like, it wasn't until afterwards I realized how much reflection when I was looking at the images, and a couple of shots, I could see myself in his glasses.
The challenging one is always the mirrored sunglasses. That one's a key one to play with, especially if they're blue. Wonderful blue light. Mm.
I think you just Photoshop a nice picture of the sky on top of the glass, and it's
Right. The other question is, does Instagram make you mad because there's so many would-be portrait people, touting and influencing, and then various people falling into the trap of saying, oh, that's a great photo, or does that just not basically impact on your business at all?
That's a really good question. I like Instagram. I have different theories of it. I'm not one of these people that wants millions of followers and hundreds and thousands of likes. That's kind of become a commercial business. It doesn't really represent what the photographer is about. That's a really good question. In terms of competition, I'd say a lot of that comes down to how that pushes you to be more creative with it. So there are lots of people that say, oh, and a smartphone can do just the same. You can have a fancy blurry background. But with some of these examples, they are done in very different ways with very different pieces of equipment to achieve something different that a phone just couldn't.
Would you use the Instagram as a selling medium to sell your particular abilities as a photographer?
Yes, that's... again, really important. I think more than ever now, especially if you're trying to get somewhere in terms of being a recognized portrait photographer, the first question you'll see, especially if you're trying to do studio work or supporting an assistant or being a second shooter, the first thing they'll ask is, what's your Instagram handle? So yeah, it is important to really have a profile out there.
Right. Okay, so let's have a look at some of these images. The first one I'm going to show up here is this young lady with, is that what, a bunch of leaves?
It is. So this is actually taken with a Canon EOS R and an 85 millimeter Konica lens. I don't know, have any of you been a Konica camera user in the past?
Long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Had. What was it, the Konica, yes.
Yeah.
So this is a, I'm very much a prime lens fan. So this was taken with an 85 Konica from about 1950-55, and it's entirely manual focus, which was a bit of a challenge. It was kind of more of an exploratory type thing. So we were trying to capture some movement in the leaves, but it came far more detailed in terms of being portrait driven in this experiment. I really liked the way that the picture falls off at the edges. I'd like to hear some others' feedback on that kind of style in particular.
And have you focused clearly on her eyes? Is that the focus point that you're always striving for? Is that a trick that you should always look to do, is aim for the eyes?
It is initially. Lots of people always have a play with this in certain things. I'd also come down to what type of camera you're using. Canon obviously was criticized early on for its eye autofocus, and Sony kind of led the way with it. But I think they've kind of caught up with this in particular, because it's a manual focus lens. Obviously, that's coming down to me. There is very little in terms of the software side of things to focus on the eyes of this.
I've got a Canon 85 millimeter lens, and I bring it out occasionally, and gives a very different picture to the Canon 50 millimeter lens I've got. So interesting what you use them for. Sometimes they're not things that I immediately put on the camera, but I think, oh, I might have an 85 millimeter day and take some portraits with it. But how do you select those different focal lengths and that type of approach? And then sometimes it looks quite good if you've got the long, if you've got a telephoto lens to pull out a photo, a portrait as well.
It is. So one thing that's really different is obviously working with people and their reactions in terms of being in front of a camera. Certain times, most people, it's they've never had a proper photo shoot in the past and they feel nervous, and it does show in some of the photography. So it's trying to get an even balance with that. So I'm really particular on what lenses I choose to do that. If someone's a little bit
closer, you get to them, the more.
Yeah, exactly. So a common one is I use the 135 EF. That's always really helpful if someone feels a little bit uncomfortable in taking a photo shoot at a distance. And it's more of a playful type lens in that respect. The 85 is probably the most common one that I use. It can very much depend on the actual project. I'm a keen fan of 35 millimeter focal length too.
And from what you're saying there, you don't have a problem with using older secondhand lenses, would you? Is that a market you look at? You don't have to have the latest up-to-date 2021 lens?
No, not at all. This kind of comes down to someone that was a big fan of lots and lots of kit, and I'm sure we're all guilty of owning several bags, as we mentioned earlier, or dreaming of owning every particular lens. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I also find that you end up being far more creative in having a set of three particular lenses in that focal length. I think prime lenses is also a must in terms of portrait photography. You learn far much more in having prime lenses, especially in terms of distancing and focal lengths.
Okay. So let's...
What works for me, the two things that work for me on this shot is the colours in the background picked up with the leaves that she's holding. So it's that, you know, that storytelling piece. And then one of the things that I find really difficult with doing portrait photography is directing people, but what works really well on this shot is just, I don't know, I'm assuming this is deliberate, but just a drop of the shoulder has given the shot a diagonal rather than just, you know, straight up. Yeah,
it's interesting you said that, because the in terms of how she's portrayed, she wasn't actually posing. It was actually that she spun with the leaves in her hand to capture something quite different like that. I like to see motion in lots of my photography, or that, as you said, with the color scheme, I think you'll see it in some of the others, I think that's really vital in trying to bring the relationship between obviously the items or their clothes and their background. I'm sure some of the other pictures we're going to see has the same kind of thing.
Yeah, let's move on to this Halloween picture. This young lady here with a particularly smart looking pumpkin there. That must have been particularly difficult to light, Craig. It's got some other various different lighting issues there.
It was. So I know someone's not going to like this, but there was a rotor light involved in some of this to one particular side of the image. But yes, I did hand carve the pumpkin, if anybody was interested.
Another skill you have.
It was based very early in the morning. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning in a graveyard. I wouldn't recommend that for everyone. It just depends.
No wonder she looks grumpy.
In terms of how it was lit, so we've obviously got the rotor light, and there is actually a remote control or triggered light actually inside the pumpkin that I could control and change the colors of, just to give it a bit more depth of field towards it. I really enjoyed this shoot. It was something quite different. And the lady that was obviously in the picture was really fascinated in making costumes in terms of like theater productions. And this was a project for her as much as it was for me.
That's interesting. I was going to mention the accessories there. Was that down to you or her? Is that the look she wanted? The earrings and the watch and the bangles and all of that. It all not contrived, but it seems to have been that was very set out deliberately to have those elements in it. Was that you or was that her?
It was kind of a mixture of both parties, to be honest. It was probably about 2 or 3 weeks of planning for the overall shoot. There's probably about another 300 or 400 pictures in and around the same kind of location for this one. In terms of the accessories, so the bangle in particular, that was her choice. The huge pearl earrings was something that I wanted to explore because it kind of brings a different depth to the picture, especially because she's all black. It also kind of works quite nicely in terms of the reflection off of those. It was much more of a play. When you're working with portraits in particular, I think those kind of things are really important to pick out, especially in terms of accessories. They are kind of things that people will pick up on, or it's part of the storytelling. So a lot of my pictures, before I do the actual shoot, I want to know more about the person and what story that they would like to tell as much as just taking their photo.
The third one is this young lady leaning on, is it a rail by the looks of it, and a building background?
It is. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with London. I'm going to give a location away in this one, but it's actually a popular one. It's actually Canary Wharf tube station.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's the handrail that runs into the tube station itself. And at this point, they actually had a exhibition on in the tunnel, which was all decorated nicely with colour, which I thought was something quite different to explore in that. This one was more about how it was lit, to be perfectly honest. So just to the side of her, you can obviously say she's got more light across the front of her cheeks. There is a glass panel that sets it apart. And it kind of built like almost like a light tunnel in that respect. And again, there are some kind of sneaky techniques, as we picked up on before, in terms of her nail polish is also a very similar color to the rest of the background. Is about being more quirky with them.
There's a nice diagonal there as well, Ian, that you picked up in the previous photograph, the way that she's going from corner to corner instead of being back in the center of the picture. Yeah.
Craig, one of our guests we've had before was a guy called Tube Mapper, that you and he's doing a project of dancers on the tube station. So he's got a dancer and he sets them up in the different tube stations. So if you're looking for the different tube stations locations, Tube Mapper is quite a good person to follow.
Yeah. That's always good to know.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got an excellent book as well.
Excellent book on it as well.
Yeah, Craig, if you produce a book, Ian will Ian will buy it.
Yeah, I'll buy it. I'll pre-order it now.
This kind of goes off topic a little bit, but it is relevant to Tube Line. There's a book called Walking the Tube Lines that I would highly recommend if you're someone that likes walking. It covers all of the tube system, including the stations that are closed, which is a good fun. It's nice to find some different shooting locations with that too.
Yeah, Ewan has a problem with bags. I've got a problem with books.
I won't point to the shelf here. Slowly bending with the weight of books.
Now this one I really did like. This is a lady in front of the telephone box. There's a real star to that I like. Tell us the details of that one, Craig.
Okay, so again, in terms of equipment, it's a 5D Mark IV in this case. And again, it was a manual focus 1950s lens. I think it was a Konica again with this. I like to do lots of location-based portraits that are not necessarily the obvious. So I do lots of things in terms of shooting through things or playing with the reflections. On this one, it's actually shot through the gap in a security barrier at Westminster. This was kind of a very different type of shoot. So this lady had an idea of exactly what she wanted to create in terms of fashion. She actually made all of the clothing that's in the shoot. And it was about telling the story of being in London in terms of wearing different fashions or standing out or being iconic. So obviously the telephone box played an important part.
Yeah.
Some of the other photos in this entire series are all London landmark based. So there's one with the London Eye, there's one with Trafalgar Square. It was about trying to bring a destination point to the fashion that she had in the shots too.
So we're talking about the telephone one then here, because the telephone one and the one, or the two that you've got the framing, I really like your framing. I'm a sucker for framing. And so I quite like the way that you framed it and pulls the eye into the center.
Yeah, that's always an interesting challenge. I've shot through some weird and wonderful things in my time, from bottoms of milk bottles to other people's sets of glasses. So sometimes reflection in glass does help.
The thing I like about the shape of what you've shot through, it's almost mimics sort of a female form.
Or a wine glass.
Yeah.
Or looking through a keyhole. Yeah.
So it sort of complements her.
I did a project in the past called the postage stamp. And what we did was, this is going to give the game away. We put a GoPro inside a package and we posted it through the post, and it took shots all the way along the journey through the back of a postage stamp. So we got to see the entire process of going through the sorting machine in the post office to going right up to the doorstep and going through a post box, which is quite an interesting thing to do. But
yeah. All these posties just throwing it around and not taking good care of it.
Yeah. So the fragile stickers you had on it and the keep this way up didn't kind of work then, no?
The only thing I did was put a GoPro at the bottom of a cup of coffee. So as I was pouring the cup of coffee onto the GoPro, that was good fun as well. So your portrait of you changed as the coffee went into the cup.
Two sugars in a GoPro.
For those of you who'd like to see Damo's coffee, I think that was on show number 6 we did, so you can. Okay, and the last one we're going to look at tonight is this image.
It's another framing one with the two frames.
Yeah, this young lady in the white coat. Is that between the rails of a chair or a seat or a bench or something, Craig? This one.
Or is it a reflection?
It is. So it's the wooden handle of a bench. So if you know the really ornate curves.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually shot through one of those. And this lady was really interesting. She is actually a British champion in basketball. And she wanted to capture some pictures that told a very different story to her. So she's really interested in fashion, and she actually also is a qualified lawyer, something completely different. So there's actually two sets of pictures like this. So one that tells the sports side and one that really tells who she is as a person too. I really enjoyed this shoot and it was really creative. But the one thing about this day that this was shot on, it was freezing. I appreciate all of the time that she spent outside too.
And again, what was that just taken with just a basic camera and a light setup, or was it au naturel, should we say?
So this is entirely au naturel, to be honest. It was in the middle of a park in Victoria by the tube station.
So sometimes, yeah, you can just capture an image like that without, not, I'm saying not too much planning. Other times you plan it to death and still may not achieve what you want. So
no, I think especially with planning portrait photography, a lot of people have a location in mind or they want some storytelling element to it. So a lot of them are London based in the series that you've seen here. So people have a rough idea of what they want to capture from it. This was kind of on the fly. So I think we walked around London for about an hour in various different places. And this was just one very lucky shot that came out of a bigger series of pictures.
So my portrait, style is in the likes of the passport photograph. It's usually sort of it works and you'd recognize the person, but it's trying to capture the personality, which is something I don't get. That one I really like. As you say, it's totally different from, I'm sure there must be dozens of photographs in a basketball outfit with a hoop, with a ball, all that kind of stuff. And that, looking at that picture, the last thing I would have thought was that she was a basketball player. So that really shows that kind of skill.
My portraits are of grandchildren and they never stay still. So we were in the confetti fields in Pershore on Saturday and I saw all these professional photographers and they got all the people to stay still. The family was wonderful to behave. My three children just ran everywhere and I just was grabbing pictures where I could or trying to get them all to look at the camera at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's usually the grandchildren because they're the ones that go well down with the family.
So Craig, when you do these jobs with these people, do you spend a bit of time finding out about them, trying to get to know them a bit better so that they relax more?
That's really good in terms of getting to know them. I think that's vital. It obviously makes them feel far more comfortable in taking a portrait. Just randomly meeting somebody for the first time and say, stand here, do this, is probably the most uncomfortable thing. I wouldn't want that personally if someone said that to me. The process is probably about 2 weeks. So beforehand, I get an idea of what they want to shoot or a location in mind. And then we chat back and forth about different ideas. I will, on most occasions, have a conversation with them first. I like to know a little bit about their story, who they are as a person. I think part of that makes them feel much more comfortable. It also then gives you a conversation point whilst you're shooting. That makes such a difference. I'm also one of these people that likes to make people laugh when they're having their photo taken, which makes it far more easier for them in most respects.
I hadn't thought, but I like that what you mentioned there about correct me if I'm wrong on the script, but you might choose a slightly unsuitable lens, but it puts the person more at their ease. You're standing slightly further back or away. If someone was really nervous, say, okay, let me get out a 200mm telephoto. Now I'm standing right away from them. They can a bit more. And then once you've got that, so then you move in closer and get what you want to try and take. So, okay, Greg, let's put you on the spot. What are your three top tips for taking portraits? Do you need half an hour to get your thoughts together or off the cuff?
Oh, first one is definitely don't just turn up randomly and start shooting. That's the most uncomfortable thing. If you're doing anything working with people, show them as you're going along. I've been photographed myself in various different things where people have just stood there and fired away and not said a word, it makes you feel really uncomfortable. So if it is your first time doing shoots, talk to your model. They're as human as much as you are, and they've got lots of things to tell, which makes your photography a lot better. Number two, I'd say do your research beforehand, and that comes down to as much as location, as much as it does with the fashion or the clothes that they want to wear. Don't expect someone's going to turn up and wear a series of outfits that they're not comfortable with or not happy with. That's always key. I think mood boards comes down to being a major part of that process. Number three, I'm going to be biased on this one, shoot prime. You'll learn a lot more about using lenses. You naturally learn the focal lengths, and you can learn lots of different tricks and tips with that in terms of getting certain types of background style. So when things want to blur or where you want some more control over the image, being on your feet is a massive part of being a portrait photographer. Whoever just stands still taking photos doing this job probably hasn't quite got it right yet and has a bit more to learn.
Well, they are the last three things I thought you were going to mention. I thought it'd be lighting, tripods, all this kind of stuff. And no, that's really interesting. Really interesting. Okay. Guys, have you got any other questions for Craig?
Yeah. One thing, do you do any software tricks? There's different sort of software ideas where people play around with the pictures. What sort of processing do you do on your pictures after shoot?
That's a good question. For someone that really loves computers and Apple Macs, I am very much the person of, I don't like editing too much on computer. I'm very much anti-editing in terms of colors or changing things in the image. I will do spot corrections and things like that if there's something distracting in the background, just to draw the image together. I'm not a fan of heavily editing in terms of software at all. That might come down to the lenses that I use too.
Thank you.
But also, it's about sort of true representing that person truly, isn't it, as they were at that point in time, rather than, you know, smoothing their skin and doing all that jazz, which I don't particularly agree with either.
No, I worked for about 3 years on the premise of, I take your photo, but I'm not editing it. And it was kind of a different experience. Lots of people liked that idea and it was really popular. But I think the whole Instagram and TikTok environment has completely changed how that works now, sadly. It's not kind of a true representation of what you're shooting.
I think also one of the problems with the advances in technology with 4K pictures, unfortunately, blemishes show up. Can't say that with these teeth. Show up worse than ever, and the temptation to swiftly use Photoshop to make everyone look like a 21-year-old model again has become too tempting. And if anything, it's become too easy. And you certainly look at some of the photographs of on the TV and stuff like you see that where it's so heavily done, and people think that becomes the norm. So keeping something fresh and out of camera, like you've got. So I'm taking most of these pictures we've been looking at are nearly all out of camera, though it's not.
Yeah, I'd say a majority of them are, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, that's very good, very good.
Sensible, common advice, just sensible advice.
Yeah. I think, of course, it's nice now that you've challenged everybody to go out and do some nice portraits that we can show up. We had our poppy challenge with Ian very kindly put the background on there. So maybe we'll all have a go and try and do a nice portrait or two for the next show if we can, guys. Craig, thank you very much for coming down and talking time with telling us about what you do. It's very interesting. And as I know, because I know you from other aspects, it's only a small part of your portfolio. I've seen some other excellent work for your architectural stuff as well, so maybe we'll like to bring you back sometime in the future to talk about that side of it. It's always interesting to see other people's methods and opportunities and styles. So as I said, thank you very much for coming down and joining us tonight, Craig.
Brilliant, thank you. it's been great to see what different questions I get or different challenges. Sometimes you don't really sit and think about what you do on a daily basis. It kind of comes as a rhythm or a machine. In terms of photographs, there's 220 terabyte hard drives now that are slowly backing up various videos and photos.
They're not on Western Digital, are they?
Oh no. Definitely not.
If they had been, they may not be.
Yeah, you'd be in serious trouble at this point.
Yeah.
That's horrible, horrible situation. And I don't see a fix for that at all.
I would guess as technology moves along, these sort of things may become more commonplace.
Well, there is a fix. You just go to your other backup.
Yeah.
On your other Western Digital.
I don't know if you saw their first comment. I think they made a reply on Twitter. I think the tweet has been conveniently deleted now. But the first comment was, oh, we're sorry to hear that has happened, but this product was made before we owned the company because Western Digital has been bought. So, yeah, it was like pre-ownership was the answer, and that quite quickly deleted or disappeared off the internet.
I don't want to worry you guys, but this show has been recorded onto a Western Digital.
It was.
If we don't ever see the show, you know what happened, right? Okay.
Sorry, you backed it up on your Lexar, didn't you?
I'd like to say a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is iMen Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got. And they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out. Thank you very much, Craig, for a very interesting discussion there about some portrait photography. I'm sure all our listeners and viewers must have learned some things like I did, and hopefully you'll all go out and try and take some nice portraits, the ones that you've always wanted to do. So what we'll do, let's say good night to the guys. Ian, how can people get hold of you?
Yeah, ianlewisphoto.co.uk.
Okay, great. And Neil, how can people get hold of you?
You can find me on Instagram as dodsyphoto or dodsyphoto.ch.
Great. And Damien, what whereabouts can people find you at the moment?
So the website's damienwormsley.com or damodamo on Instagram.
Okay, that's your new website. I had a look at it. It looks really nice. You've done a really good job on that.
Yeah, the guy who does it for me is from a work colleague from a long time ago, and he's quite interesting how he sets it up.
Yeah, no, it looks really good.
You didn't find the advertising was too much on it?
No, I did rush out and buy two new Mercedes, a BMW, and a Skoda. So yeah,
pretty good. Apparently, it's how you get how Google works, and you've got to give them a little bit of play to get your stuff up there and out. It's interesting.
Why they're advertising a single Wellington boot, I've got no idea.
It's obviously based on some search you've done.
Yeah.
The only problem I found is
Digital drives.
as a Canon and Fuji shooter, he had Nikon ads on his website. I mean, what's that?
Superb.
And Craig, where can we get hold of you?
Yeah, certainly. So I'm in the process of actually launching a new website, which should be available by the end of this week. And it is lightndarkroom.com.
Right, okay, and I'll put the link up here for anyone who'd like to go and have a look at that as well. Okay, so it's good night from me. If you want to contact me or send anything in relating to the show or any other comments, use martinkelly@mac.com. You'll find me also as Magic Man in the BTN Slack room, which you're all welcome to come along and join. So until we see you all again in a few weeks' time, take care. And enjoy your photography. Good night.
Good night.
Night.